Welcome everybody to a tremendous, wonderful event that we have over here, the release of Rav Nisbacher's Sefer, Ian Fundamentals for Learning Gemara. And this is a tremendous and momentous occasion for the entire yeshiva, and here as a representative yeshiva, speaking about how fundamental and how important it is and exciting it is to have such a beautiful Sefer be brought into this world. I'm not solely speaking on behalf of the yeshiva, I'm also speaking from some personal experience. If you ask about my personal relationship with Rav Nisbacher, I would say I'm both a former Talmud as well as a current Talmud. Now, I know that seems to be a contradiction in terms, but if you let me explain and perhaps give some insight as to the significance of the Sefer, maybe we'll have a better understanding exactly what I mean, and hopefully that will shed light as to how significant this contribution is, not just to our yeshiva, but hopefully for the rest of Am Yisrael. In this past week's parsha, Parshas Balosta, we begin with the reading and the mitzvah of the menorah by the Be'er Hashem Shalimor, Daber El Aharon, Vamarte Elav, Balosta El Aineros, Tal Mula Penei HaMenorah Yira, Ya'iru Shivasa Aineros. That Baron has this mitzvah, we all know, to light the menorah in the Mishkan, and then eventually in the Beis HaMikdash. Rashi points out on this Lashon of Bahaloska, he gives two explanations as to the significance of this idea of Bahaloska. Bahaloska al-Shem shalahalib ola kasav bad lakasam Lashon Aliyah, shetzarech lahatlik ad shetetei shalheves ola me'alea. There's a mitzvah to light the candle in such a way in where the flame will take hold and light by itself before you remove the candle in which you're lighting. We actually see this paskin halacha lemaisa in Hilchos Chanukah, that there are some remnants of this halacha as well when we're lighting Chanukah candles. You got to keep the shamish there until the candles are actually lit. The second explanation that Rashi gives, Rashi explains, v'odar sh'rabaseinu mikan shemala ha'isal of me'amenorah shalea kohen ominu meitiv, that the kohen would walk up to the menorah. There were steps that he would have to stand upon a ramp in order to light the menorah and the mikdash. What exactly is the significance and maybe the connection to this the sefer that's being released? The Gemara Masechta Shabbos and Chaf Beis Omid Beis tells us as follows: what is the purpose and significance of the menorah and the mikdash? The Gemara explains: Masiv Rashiyes Michutzal Paroches Ha'idus Yaruch Bechila Orahu Tzarech. Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu really need the or the light of the menorah? Of course, the Avalokha Arvin Shana Shaholcha Ben Yisrael, the Midbar, Lohocha Ella Oro. Am Yisrael, for the 40 years in the Midbar, they were guided by the or of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Amuraish. So therefore, what's the significance of the menorah in the Mikdash? Mikan Shemala, Haisa, Lefnei HaMenorah, the Elder Eidasi, Levaya Olam, Shashtina Shor B'Yisrael. The significance of the menorah was this testimony to the entire world that the Shekhinah, the divine presence, rests within Am Yisrael, amongst the Jewish people. And therefore, the significance of the menorah and the connection between the Shekhinah and the menorah and Am Yisrael is quite clear. And we know the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachot to Daf Chaf that after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ela B'dad Avash HaLacha, that after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed and there's no makom for the Shekhinah, then the way in which we connect to the Ribono Shel Olam is through Limud HaTorah, through the Chachmas HaTorah. And in fact, this is seen Halacha L'maisa, the Gemara Maseches Basra, Daf Kaf Hei, Amud Beis, Paskin, the Shulchan Aruch, and Siman Tzadi Dalet tells us, Kol Misha Yachim Yadrim. If a person wants to become smart, a person wants to gain a Chachmas HaTorah, they need to face southwards when they are davening to Hashem. Because we know that the menorah was in the south, facing south in the Heichal. And therefore that is the seat of the Chachma, the seat of Chachmas HaTorah. And the menorah can be seen as a symbolism, a way to achieve Shekhinah, closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, specifically through the venue of halacha, of limud gemara, of limud Torah, be'ian on a high level. Again, in Mishlei, Kineir Mitzvah V'Torah Or, we see that this deep connection exists between the Torah and the menorah itself. And I think with this idea in mind, we could fully understand and appreciate exactly both Rav Nussbacher as a mechanech and what this sefer means as a contribution to Am Yisrael. Rav Nussbacher as a mechanech, I remember, it wasn't so long ago, I don't know, over a decade, but sitting in the shir and fully embracing and engaging and enjoying to the fullest extent and the fullest degree possible the Chachmas HaTorah he was giving over. And it wasn't just about the limud and going through the sugyas and opening our eyes to different concepts that we never were exposed to prior. It was also the way in which that Torah was taught, the methodology that was employed, giving over specific tools and methods in which allowed every Talmud in this year to grow in their own limud HaTorah, and specifically in their limud HaTorah Be'ian. Reading carefully, conceptualizing things, catchphrases to know exactly how to answer a question of the Rishonim, what are the Rishonim trying to get at? All those skills and tools were invaluable in the beginning stages of Limud HaGemara Be'ir. And that's something that I experienced both when I was in Ishir, but that is something which has allowed myself, and I would say countless hundreds, if not thousands of other Talmidim, to have grown within their own Limud HaTorah going forward in the future. So despite the fact that it's been, like we said, many years since I've been in this year, I'm a former Talmud, but I still feel nowadays when I'm opening up a Gemara, when I'm preparing a shir, when I'm looking to give something over and learn something for the first time, I'm still utilizing those same tools and skills that were developed over a decade ago. So therefore, I'm both proudly a current and former Talmud of Rav Nussbacher. And the excitement and joy about this sefer is that it gives the opportunity, not just for the 20 or so Talmidim who are currently in the shir from year to year to experience and enjoy and grow from that Limud HaTorah, but even more than that, it opens it up to the rest of the Jewish people to continue to develop their own skills and look how they can improve their own Limud HaGemara Be'in, to know how they could develop a love for Gemara Be'in by taking skills that may seem unattainable, that may seem too difficult, and looking at how one can employ them and use them in order so that they themselves can become self-sufficient Lomdei Gemara Be'in. With that in mind, it's a tremendous, tremendous plus that we have to have this sefer that other people can enjoy and get a chance to learn from. And I would like to take this opportunity to actually introduce the Rosh Yeshiva. I remember I had this plus when I was in Yeshiva. So the Rosh Yeshiva at that standpoint was giving Shir Yomi. And I know that the Rosh Yeshiva, when he was giving Shir Yomi, I remember the excitement within this year. I didn't have the schus to be in this year, but the Masa Matan of the Talmidim, the yelling in the Beis Medrash about what exactly is the Shoresh HaMachlokas, trying to get to the depth of the matter. And that is something certainly that the Rosh Yeshiva shares in common with the Rav Nussbacher, that desire for growth in Gemara Be'in. And it's a tremendous schus that we have the Rosh Yeshiva to address, give us some different bracha. טוב, כבוד הרב נוסבכר, רבני הישיבה, the family of רב נוסבכר, the students that are with us in the Zoom, part of them were husband for the book, תלמידי הישיבה. I will say my words later. I think that this book is really a very, very important book of that important for Klal Yisrael. I call this week Rabbi Rosenstock that Rav Nussbacher learned by him. And I told Rabbi Rosenstock that I feel that this book is not only important for our yeshiva, but I think it's important for Klal Yisrael. I'm going to speak later, but I think that one of the things that is giving happiness, and happiness is so important in learning in order to connect the learning to the personality, and it will stay for life if someone has a system in learning. If he doesn't know how to learn, he doesn't know how to analyze, he doesn't know how to break the studio, he doesn't feel confidence in that, he can't have happiness in learning. And if there is no happiness in learning, it doesn't stay. And it's not connected, it doesn't influence the personality. When I called Rabbi Rosenzweig, I asked him to share with us, to be with us tonight. And I told Rav Nussbacher a few minutes ago that I have a surprise for him. So I will say my words later, because Rabbi Rosenzweig is waiting and I don't want him to wait. So Rabbi Rosenzweig will be now, and I will speak after that. Thank you, Rabbi Rosenzweig, for being with us. We really, really appreciate it. For that.
Okay. Everybody can hear?
Yes.
Oh, got the word. Okay. Thank you very much. I assume we're doing all of this in English. So,
I guess you just need just 2 minutes.
What's that? Can I begin?
Yes, Rabbi, go.
Okay. Go. So, yes. First of all, Kvod Rosh HaYeshiva, Rav Yamer, Shlita. Rav Yamer was kind enough to call me, as he just referred to, you know, and to ask me to participate in this very special tekes in honor of the publishing of the Sefer of Talmidi Yikiri, Rav Yosef Nussbacher, whose role in Yeshivat Shalavim is one of the premier Ramim, is known to you all. Most of you I see on the Zoom are probably his Talmidim. And of course, I know him from the other side, from being a Rebbe and he being my Talmid. But I've had the pleasure over time to see, you know, the kind of his own personal growth. We'll discuss that in just a minute. You know, and his contribution, his impact as a Rebbe. We're able, to basically a partner now, in many Talmidim, some of whom I've seen on the screen, who are Talmidim of mine as well. Some of the, from years back and some in the present. And that's really an extraordinary, schus for any, father and a child or Rebbe and a Talmud, to share that kind of bond. So I really appreciate Rav Yamer's invitation. I'm always happy to participate in anything that happens in Yeshivat Shalvim. My connections there and my deep feelings are well known. But particularly as it relates to the accomplishments of my own Talmidim and the fine Talmid Chachamim who educate in such an effective way the Talmidim of Yeshivat Shalavim. It's an additional pleasure. If I were only here to give Yasha Koach, as an expression of Nachas, Vishinanta Levanecha, which refers to Talmidecha, Dayenu, that would certainly be enough. But in addition, the book, the Sefer that is being celebrated, and Rav Yamer already made allusion to the fact that That's an important sefer, not, you know, the routine sefer that, you know, many people put out, which is also very important, but a different kind of a sefer, one which is more rare, and that is a sefer on the methodology, an approach to learning a derech, you know, halimud. That is, of course, a topic, those of you who know me or acquainted with me know that that's a topic which is very close to my heart. I think that the focus on methodology and approach and derech, knowing what you're doing and why you're doing it, and I'll speak a little more about that in the couple of minutes that I have, is something that is very important for Limud HaTorah. And not just in a technical way, you know, kind of, you know, how do we solve the sugya or how do we formulate the sugya, but it, the right way to formulate and to approach a sugya obviously reflects a derech hachashiva, a way of thinking, and a perspective on what Torah and Chafetz Shel Torah and Limud HaTorah is all about. Therefore, a sefer on methodology, and particularly one that is done with the kind of care that Rav Nussbacher invested many years of thinking very carefully and formulating in a subtle and careful way, you know, the categories. He and I have had many discussions about this, making sure, you know, that what emerges is not a how-to book, which, you know, in theory can trivialize, you know, the process of Limud HaTorah, but on the contrary, something that underscores the depth of Torah and that is an approach that is enhanced, you know, by the Chomer and by, you know, pursuing the Chomer in ever deeper, more iyun and more omek ways. So such a book on methodology, you know, which combines, you know, the approach and examples which highlight what can be accomplished when you have a purposive approach to Limud HaTorah, when you are doing things, you know, in a thoughtful and intentional and a consistent way, where you're engaging the material, you know, in a fresh way, but that you have, you know, a priori categories, you know, that you're testing it against. That kind of a sefer, I think, is rare and important. And it's an aid, but also, what I was trying to say before, the crystallization of what Iyum and Omek in learning is all about. The dialectic, if you will, between Masora and Chiddush, between, you know, being a Talmud, receiving, you know, the tradition, Moshe Kibbel Torah Misinai, and adding to it, Anofech Mishalcha, is, of course, a yesod in Limud HaTorah and a linchpin principle in Hashkafa. From the very beginning of Jewish history, we have been witness to this magnificent dialectic, which has enriched Torah and allowed it to maintain its dynamism, notwithstanding, you know, the challenges of confronting, you know, all sorts of different situations, you know, in every generation and in every geographic location, etc. I mean, Ela Toldos Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram Holy Das Yitzchak, if you follow the life of Yitzchak Avinu, the second and the firstborn, you know, Jew, the relationship of, you know, his, you know, Masorah, the extent to which he perceived himself as simply, you know, a Hemshech of Avram Avinu, but, you know, from the perspective of a detached observer, also was someone who immeasurably added a different, you know, nofech to that Masorah, but one which was consistent with it and advanced it. And of course, then Yaakov Tiferes, who starts out as the, you know, again, the self-image of the son of Yitzchak. I won't go into detail, but that's, you know, his hesitancy to leave Eretz Yisrael and his, you know, Ishtam Yoshe Vaholim, but who then is told to kind of cultivate his Avram Avinu side and to become also the son of his grandfather. And he, of course, Tiferes, the combination of both. But that's just the beginning of the history. Every generation, you know, that contributes to the Masorah does so, you know, by the self-image of continuity and, of course, the maximal effort and the nofech mishalcha in terms of personality and experiences that add, you know, chidushim, and that has, you know, brought us, you know, to where we are today, shechiyanu v'kimanu v'higiyanu, you know, to an ever, you know, advancing and progressing Torah, you know, that remains, you know, completely na'utz, completely ensconced in the original Masorah of Moshe Rabbeinu. That idea, of course, is very challenging and uniquely halachic and hashkafic concept. When Rabbi Eliezer said that me'olam lo amarti davar shelo shemati mipi Rabbi, as the Gemara quotes it in Sukkah and other versions of it in Chazal, and Pirkei d'Rabbi Elazar and Avos d'Rabbi Nasan, you know, provide ample proof that Rabbi Eliezer was mechadesh, you know, many halachos, you know, and we are being, you know, Omer Davar B'Shem Amro when we quote Rabbi Eliezer, not his Rebbeim. You know, that's an example of this, you know, particular dialectic. But the question, of course, is how does it work? And we don't have so much time, just a couple of minutes. You know, how can something be both, you know, merely continuity and the quotation of previous generations, and at the same time, you know, be something that is attributed and assigned to an individual member of Chachmei HaMasorah, but who is Mechadesh and who deserves, you know, his name to be associated with it. I think that there are several answers. Number one is the concept of Chiddush and Masorah itself, which we just touched on. The idea that, you know, you are first a Talmud and only then a Chacham, and that combination, because of the infinite depth and wisdom of Torah itself, you know, afochba, afochba, dekulaba, you know, allows for something to be both, you know, continuity and innovation. But in addition to that, it's the idea that, you know, HaTorah's Megillah, Megillah and Chasuma Nitna, you know, Torah has to be looked at each individual sugya and each individual concept, but at the same time has to be looked at as a unit. And that combination, you know, of analyzing each sugya, each topic with its own integrity, but also taking a step back and seeing how it relates, you know, to the bigger themes and to the parallel themes in Kol Torah Kula, is something that innately, you know, requires both Masorah, but always is going to produce Chiddush. But the third part, and these are overlapping ideas, is the idea of methodology. When Rabbi Eliezer said, "Me'olam lo amarti davar shelo shamati mipi Rabbi," you know, probably he didn't mean, you know, that every single conclusion that he reached or every single topic, you know, that he thought about, you know, was informed specifically in detail, you know, by the information that he received from his Rebbeim. It probably also means that he applied the way of thinking, the derech hachashiva, the methodology, the categories, the approach of his Rebbe, you know, no matter the topic. And maybe he never learned it with him. Mori v'Rabbi, the Rav Zatzal, you know, often used to say, you know, that he learned Kol HaTorah Kula from his father, you know, who was his Rebbe, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. And he would often say that when he learns a sugya, and especially when he gets, you know, stuck, he feels like his father, you know, is over his shoulder. And that's, you know, a very poetic way of looking at it. But it's really rooted in this reality. What he meant was, you know, that even if he didn't learn every topic and every Rambam and every, you know, Rashi with his father, in another respect, because he mastered the methodology and he could always, you know, hear his father's voice, both as Masorah, but especially as methodology Masorah, and therefore, in some level, you know, his father was always with him. And that is the treasure of proper methodology. Proper methodology ensures that you're on the right page. It ensures that your categories and your direction, you know, is one which is authentic. And then it allows you to apply your own personal conviction to the process as well. Gemara says in Temura, Tazayin, that when Moshe Rabbeinu died, Klal Yisrael were in panic, and they lost control of, it says Nishtakha, they really, you know, had a memory loss, but I always assume that means, you know, that they were not able to control the material thousands of halakhos, because Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the foundation of it all, was no longer accessible to them, and that induced panic. Ad she amad Osniel ben Knaz v'hichziru mitok pepul. Gemara says that originally they panicked, they went to Shmuel, they went to Yeshua, they said, you know, speak to the Rabbeinu Shalom, let us retrieve what we've lost. And they were, you know, given the response of lo b'shamayim hi, ein davir rashay l'chadish davar miyata. And then Osniel ben Knaz picked himself up and was machzir, you know, hakol mitoch pulpula. So it's a very remarkable Gemara, obviously. It means that Klal Yisrael, you know, lo aman Yisrael, and Torah is not going to be mishtakeach from Klal Yisrael as long as people put in the effort. But it also means that there's always a methodology which, if pursued authentically, properly, with integrity, can carry us forward. And therefore, a book on methodology, which puts it in its proper place, together with the sugyas and the content, is one which is always illuminating, you know, and always important. In the parsha that we read, Parshas Baloscha, you know, the Torah speaks about the menorah, which is a symbol in Chazal for different, you know, branches of wisdom. And in some cases, the Netziv and HaMikdavar in particular, for different methodologies of Limud HaTorah. There can be chidushim in drachim, as there historically have been. There's always continuity, but the question of emphasis and the question of terminology, there's always tweaks. But the tweaks in Torah are important, and they can be transformative, even as they represent or continue to represent continuity. And therefore, it's miksha achas, even as there are different branches of the menorah. And that's what Chazal understood as well. Rav Soloveitchik used to always say again about, you know, his grandfather, Rav Chaim, for whom he, you know, had, you know, immeasurable appreciation, as we all do, Pivanu Chaim, that, you know, he used to say two different things. Number one, that Rav Chaim was a mechadesh, that without him, you know, we, you know, would have trouble transmitting and, you know, teaching Torah to the next generation. And he used to say equally that anybody who doesn't understand that Reb Chaim's, you know, Masorah comes from, you know, the Tanoim and the Amoraim, you know, and from the Rishonim. Whenever the Rav liked a particular Rishon, he'd say he's a forerunner of Reb Chaim, the Rimigash, the Ramban, you know, the Ravid. If he liked the Svar, he was a forerunner of Reb Chaim. But what he really meant was that, you know, conceptual thinking, thinking in certain categories, seeing, perceiving Torah as ideas and principles that are consistent, that are fathomable and logical, you know, at least to some extent, so that we are responsible to trying to understand them as accurately as possible and to apply them, that is a long Masorah, and that Reb Chaim, of course, added to in terms of his vocabulary and his language, and so on. And this is really the, you know, the genius of methodology, not perceiving it as how to, not seeing it simply as a way to solve problems or to move ahead in the sugya, all those things as well. But more important, the derech ha-chashiva, way of understanding what Torah really is about, that it's about values, that it's supposed to shape our worldview, that we're supposed to internalize those values. All that has to do with a proper methodology. Your memory and your classification of what you learn, so that you can then in turn compare and contrast with other topics. And in that meta halakhic part of your analysis, you know, also emerge with greater insights and appreciation of Dvar Hashem. All of that is part of, you know, proper methodology. So I just wanted to come back to where we started. As I say, Rav Yosef Nussbacher Shlita is a treasured Rebbe in Shalavim and a treasured Talmud, you know, for me, and a partner as well, you know, over the generations. He came to my shir already, you know, very talented and very interested. Masmid, someone who really invested, was Roy, you know, even then. And it's really been a tremendous nachas, you know, to see him grow, you know, and become a young Talmud Chacham now, you know, a seasoned Talmud Chacham and somebody who is a Mechaber Sfarim and somebody who's Mamid Talmidim. And again, I know the kind of impact that he has because I share a Talmidim with him, and I really have great admiration for everything that he does, his integrity, his learning, his personality, all of it. So, you know, he, you know, in this Sefer really, you know, put a lot of, I say, investment and effort and thought, you know, the English methodology parts and the Hebrew, you know, sugya parts, you know, are very integrated in a way that really, you know, brings out, you know, these different aspects of the treasure, you know, of methodology. And that methodology is a shortcut, but methodology is a deeper, you know, and an added facet of Yediyas Hashem and Yediyas Dvar Hashem. And that, you know, is something to be celebrated on a personal level, you know, in terms of the yeshiva and in terms of the Olam HaTorah. So I just want to wish him that he should continue, you know, in good health, mechayel ochayel, to be mamid talmidim, to be mechaber svarim, and to have the kind of impact that he has on Klal Yisrael. And we look forward to future svarim, and especially the continued impact that he has. Mechayel ochayel, mazel tov, mazel tov.
Rebbe, the Rosh Yeshiva.
I just want to apologize in advance. I have to run to something soon, so I'm going to try to stand for another couple of minutes.
I want to thank you tremendously both for being with us now and both for all the help of the Torah that is being done. Everyone knows, and giving unbelievably shurim, Mami Talmidim, and we have a lot of boys that are learning in Yeshiva and then coming to his fear. So it's really an opportunity where I would just like to thank you for everything and wish you a lot of years of happiness and behold and Amadat al Midei Chachamim. Toda Rabba. Thank you very much. The Eglei Tzal wrote a book about Hilchot Shabbat, and his introduction, the Eglei Tzal speaks, "Umidei davri zachor ezkor, ma sheshamati k'tzat pnei adam, to'in miderech ha-sechel bina nimud ha-Torah ha-Kudosha. Ve'amru ke'alomed o'mechadesh chidushim, ושמח ומתענג בלימודו, אין זה לימוד התורה כל כך נשמע, כמו אם היה לומד בפשיטות, שאין לו מהלימוד שום תענוג, רק לומד נשמע. אבל הלומד ומתענג בלימודו, הרי זה מתערב בלימודו גם הנעת עצמו." Says the Eglei Tzal in the introduction, there are people that think that the man shouldn't enjoy learning Torah. Because if he enjoys learning Torah, then it comes to be already his own thing. He enjoys it. So there is a chisaron in the lishma. He's not doing it only for the Torah. He enjoys it. He's doing it for himself. Says the Eglei Tzal, ve'adrabah, uve'emet ze ta'ut mefursam, ve'adrabah, ki ze ikar mitzvah limud ha-Torah. להיות סף ושמח ומתענג בלימודו. ואז דברי התורה נבלעין בדמו. ומאחר שנהנה מדברי תורה, הוא נעשה דבוק לתורה. Says the Eglei Tzal, this is a tremendous mistake. You must enjoy learning. Because if you enjoy learning, then the learning and yourself come to be one. Yes, the expression Nivla'in bedamo and Nasa davuk la Torah. How really do you come to enjoy Torah? How do you really succeed having the glue? The happiness, the enjoyment of Torah is causing the glue to connect between the learning and the personality in order that it can stay for life. How does it happen? I think that it only happens if you have a method in learning. If you have a system that you can take, break it out, understand, if you can be creativity, if you can learn by yourself, you're not passive. If you understand how to take the details and make of the details rules, and understand what is the omic HaTorah, you can't connect, have emotional connection to something that is not deep. Why Iyun is so important? Because in Iyun you are learning the deepness of Torah, and your sechel come to be slowly, slowly similar to the sechel of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the way of thinking. And when you are learning the Iyun, your whole analysis about life changes. You see life in a deep way. Therefore, we are putting in yeshiva so much emphasis on the Iyun part. The Iyun part is causing to amalator. You are thinking about the sugya the whole time. You are trying to go step after step after step as deep as possible. Understand really to come to the shorosh ha-machloket, to come to the deep understanding. If you don't have a method in learning, you can't do it. And number three, if you don't learn the Iyun, the Torah doesn't come to be Torah Chaim. You can't take new cases or new ideas and see what the Torah have to say on that. Because you don't learn the deep, you don't understand the rule. You don't understand the understanding. If you don't understand the understanding, you can't apply it to different cases. Therefore, the Iyun and the Limud Be'Iyun is something that is so important. It causes a man to have the Simcha in learning. It causes a man to be creativity and to be mechadish by himself, to understand Betzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I feel that before every seven Be'iyun we have to say, we are now trying to understand Betzon HaKadosh. What Hashem really wants us to take deepness from this sugya to life, to other sugya in the Shas. To really go deep and deep and deep. Rav Nussbacher wrote in the book, his shita, how to learn a sugya. And as I said before, when I spoke to Rav Rosenzweig, I said that I don't think that there are a lot of books that are really giving a shita in learning. And what is special, and I think the contribution of this book to Klal Yisrael, that is giving a shita. Everyone has to take from that shita what belongs to his personality and what right for him. But there is a shita that goes and analyzes a sugya in depth, in examples, a lot of different examples. And therefore, I think that this book is really tremendous contribution. And it's covered to the yeshiva that Rav Nussbacher wrote it, but it's, I think, important for Klal Yisrael, not only for our yeshiva. But more than that, Rav Dessler says that Ahavat HaLimud Zehu Ikar HaLimud. And says Rav Dessler, HaMelamed. Now he doesn't speak about the student, he speaks about the rabbi. And he says, HaMelamed Tzech Limistor Et HaKdusha Ve'et HaChavivut. Shehem Osim Et HaYirat Shamayim Ve'et HaAhava. Vezehu Ikar HaLimud She'en Kamohu B'chol HaLimudim HaAcherim Shebaolam. Says Rav Dessler, when you speak about physics, mathematics, the most important thing is to get knowledge. When you speak about Torah, the most important thing is to get Yirat Shamayim. Is to get the Chavivut, the Kedusha. And if there is no love of learning, there is a missing in the Yirat Shamayim. Not only that, they, like we spoke before about the Eklei Tzal, it doesn't come to be part of you. But there is a missing in the Yirat Shamayim. There is a missing in the Ahava of Torah and Kadosh Baruch. And that's the importance of Ahavat Torah. I think that everyone knows Rav Nussbacher, that is really putting unbelievably effort, both in giving a shita and both in giving Yirat Shamayim to the students and to the whole yeshiva. And I really want to take that opportunity and to thank him. Very, very happy that the parents are here, both the parents of Rav Nussbacher and both the parents of the Rabbani. Very happy that the family is here. Firstly, to bless everyone with Mazel Tov and a lot of simcha for the wedding. And secondly, for thanking Rav Nussbacher for all the years of Mesirut Nefesh, of giving Torah in a systematic way, in a deep way, with Yirat Shamayim, not only the shiurim during the week, but coming special on Friday and beginning a shiur about Hashkafa and Derech B'chaim and so on. And really opportunity to thank Rav Nussbacher for everything and bless him that this book will be only the beginning. There will be other books and so on and continue a lot of years of Hafatzat Torah, Simchata Shel Torah, Mazal Tov, Mazal Tov.
Thank you to the Rosh Yeshiva. Now we have a tremendous opportunity to actually hear from Rav Nussbacher's father, Dr. Nussbacher. And I will say that it's interacting with both Dr. Nussbacher and Dr. Nussbacher over the years. We have the familial connection. Baruch Hashem, it's always been a tremendous privilege to see how dedicated they are to academia, intellectual pursuits, to accomplishments, to ambition. And certainly Rav Nussbacher's ability to write such a wonderful sefer, which is going to be used for many people for their own intellectual pursuit of Torah, I'm sure it's a tremendous success. And without further ado, Dr. Nussbacher.
I must say, when I look out and see this large group of Talmidim, it reminds me of a time in our lives. My wife and I came to Shalvim a couple of decades ago to visit our young son, who was then a student at Yeshiva Shalvim. And again, there was a group of young, eager faces, amongst them my son. And just seeing you all here, it's a reminder of that wonderful day, which was really the beginning of his career as a Talmud and a Malame. I am not here to give a Dvar Torah, fortunately for you and fortunately for me. But I did want to give you a little thumbnail sketch of Rav Yosef as a son, a husband, a father, and a teacher. Yosef's birth itself was an act of chesed. How could that be? Well, Yosef was born on Dalet Tishrei. As a result, his mother, my wife, was released from fasting on that Yom Kippur. So that was considered a big chesed in our family, that Yosef was born on Dalet Tishrei. So Yosef was a very precocious child, learning to walk and talk at a very young age, and he certainly hasn't stopped since. As early as kindergarten or first or second grade, one of his teachers said to us, he's my assistant teacher, or at least he thinks he is. So he was already cut out to be in the field of chinuch at a very young age, at least according to his mentors. At a very early age, he learned, he showed a single talent and learned constantly his Limud Torah. Even as a youngster, he had a sign in his room, Aseh Lecha Yitim LaTorah. Even as a young man, I remember him having that sign. Yosef, educationally, got through elementary school with flying colors, got through high school, ended as a valedictorian. But he also was a sort of a Renaissance kind of a person. I don't know how many of you know Yosef is an accomplished athlete, actually. He can rollerblade, ice skate, swim, play basketball, and specifically hockey. He was an all-star hockey player on the Hafter High School team. And we still have the trophies. But he also graduated as valedictorian with also a special honors in study of Talmud. Upon graduating from high school, Yosef was offered a scholarship to attend Columbia University, but chose instead to go to YU because Columbia, quote unquote, did not have a Beit Midrash, which is true. He spent his summers in his youth at Camp Orasha as a camper, counselor, and several years in the Kollel as well. He was an experienced Baal Kore and Baal Tefillah. I don't know if any of you have ever heard him read the Torah, but I am an experienced Baal Kore myself, but teaching him his Bar Mitzvah Parsha, which actually he ended up reading twice. Once he did his real Bar Mitzvah date, which was Hazinu, but that was too close to Yom Kippur, so he had a second Bar Mitzvah on Rishis. But he's a fabulous Baal Kore and Baal Tefillah and has a beautiful voice that somebody once told me, who was an expert in the field, has perfect pitch. So as he entered YU, he was offered a Max Stern scholarship and started his first year under the tutelage of Rav Meir Twersky, grandson of Rav Soloveitchik. Following that, he spent a year at Chalpim and then returned back to YU, majoring in computer science, graduating with a 3.97 index, but wasn't valedictorian, and remarkably, we don't understand how that happened. But in any event, he was a tremendous student of Gemara, and as you heard, his Rebbe, most of the time at least, was Rabbi Rosenzweig. Yosef entered the smicha program at YU and finished his smicha studies here in Israel at Grush Institute, and where he was the Talmud of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. So Rav Lichtenstein had a great impact on Yosef's life as well. One thing I forgot to mention, when he was in high school, towards the end of his high school period, one of the Rabbeim at Hafter decided to institute an early Gemara Shir, which was an hour before regular classes began, and asked for volunteers. Of course, Yosef was the first volunteer to attend his Gemara Shir, and his bleary-eyed father had to get up and drive him to it and then drive to work. But he was an assiduous student and loved learning. And I must say that even at an early age, it was obvious that he was a special person as far as Limud Torah was concerned. Following his smicha, which he obtained, he started and working here at Chalvim, and this is the only yeshiva he has ever been associated with, and he has, over the more than two decades, he and his wife, who's also involved in Chinuch, have been involved in Chinuch and have mentored and taught hundreds and hundreds of Talmidim like yourselves, many of whom still refer to him as Rebbe, call him on the phone for advice, and when he's in New York coming as he does once a year, to interview students and to hold Misibot and Shabbatonim. And the last two summers before the COVID, he ran Kolel in Woodmere for under the auspices of the yeshiva and Young Israel of Woodmere, and played basketball too with them. But he really was an outstanding student. His first child, Yaffa, was born 2 years after his marriage, and she is the first of his eight Sabra children. So he is the most respectful person I have ever met, as far as me and my wife and our family are concerned. As far as the father is concerned, his family is unbelievably devoted to him, and he is devoted to him, to his children and his wife, and he helps immensely in the household. And I remember many phone calls when we were on the phone. He says to me, "Dad, I have to interrupt the phone call because this and this child needs me to help with their homework, or my wife needs me to go do this." So his family always has taken precedence, and he has always been a tremendous father. As far as the teacher is concerned, there is nothing I can add to the sea of students I see before me and this wonderful sefer that he has produced, and a labor of love and effort. And I don't know when he sleeps, to tell you the truth. When he gets home from the yeshiva, I know he's, you know, with Yuli Ayan Hara, eight children, there's a lot of homeworks that need help and a lot of kids who need tender loving care, etc. And then he has to prepare his shiurim. He has never, as far as I know, given a shiur without preparation. So sometimes when we speak on the phone, it's 10 o'clock in Israel, 3 o'clock in New York. He says, "I'm just getting started." Well, Baruch Hashem, he has managed to do it quite well. I just want to end by saying, give you two little anecdotes, which sort of will encapsulate my feelings towards my son and his hashpa in the world, so to speak. Many years ago, my wife and I were at a restaurant, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw somebody who looked very familiar from my past, either from college or from the neighborhood I grew up in, which parenthetically was Williamsburg in Brooklyn, if anybody here is from Brooklyn. In any event, I saw this fellow, so my wife and I went over to the table, I introduced myself, and then we got to realize how we knew each other. During the course of the conversation, the wife, whom I had never met before, she said to me, "Are there any rabbis in your family?" I said, "No, we don't have any rabbis. There's no rabbis in my family." She says, "Why? That's funny, because my son went to yeshiva in Israel and he had a Rav Nussbacher." I said, "Oh, that Rav Nussbacher. In our family, it's Yosef. There's no Rav Nussbacher. I hope it's not an insult, but amongst our family, it's Yosef, okay?" But so we were taken aback by that, and she looked at me like I was a nut. "What do you mean there's no rabbis in your village?" The second story is a very fascinating story as well. A while ago, I don't know how many years, at least a decade or more, Yosef was involved in moving from one dwelling to another in Beit Shemesh. And the day of the signing of all the documents and payments and this and that came, and it went to the bank and the lawyer and the accountant and the money changers, etc., etc. At the end of the day, Yosef sat down with his checkbook and his bank accounts and all the paperwork that he had, and he realized there was an excess of a considerable amount of money in his favor. He scratched his head, went through the numbers again. He said, "Somebody made a mistake here, not me." So he called up the lawyer, he called up the accountant, he called up, et cetera, et cetera. "No, well, our books look clean." He called the money changer. He says, "Are you sure you gave me when we changed?" The guy said, "Well, we don't keep such good accounts, but I don't think it was me." So Yosef didn't know what to do. So what does a nice Jewish man like my son do? He calls a rebbe. So who? I don't know whom he called, but he called someone and he was told, "Don't do anything for a week or 10 days, whatever. Think. Just think and review every minute of that day. Write it down, this, that, and the other day." So Yosef did that. And at the end of the 2-week period, he said, it's not my money. I can't figure out where it came from. It must be the money changer. So he took this fairly large amount of money, put it in an envelope, and gave it to the money changer, period. I don't know how many other people in this planet would do that. So I just want to finish by saying two words. My mother should rest in peace. We refer to him as this, the guy with the beard. Used to say, the best thing you could say about a person is, I don't know how many of you know Yiddish, and I'll translate it. He is a person is zugot und zulat, someone who's dedicated to God and to mankind. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nussbacher, for those words and insights and anecdotes. I'm sure they'll be used heavily in the Purim school next year. Next, we have another beautiful opportunity to hear from Nussbacher's father-in-law, Dr. Spindel. I know that a lot of you don't know this, but Rindisbacher actually used to live here in Tel Aviv. And when he was here, the Spindels used to come often to watch the kids, help out. And obviously together with Rindisbacher and the Rebbetzin, to produce a sefer like this, you need a lot of support and you need a lot of emphasis on Limud HaTorah, and that's certainly something which the Spindels stand for. My understanding is that Dr. Spindel has been to us a bunch of different times and is also an eye doctor. So if you want to, you're very bothered by a lot of Rindisbacher's very like precise diukim, you can thank Dr. Spindel for his eye there today. So without further ado, Dr. Spindel. Thank you. This is a hard act to follow by Mahutin. But I don't know how many of you know that my Mahutin and I went to YU together. Then we interned together at Maimonides Hospital. So I knew Maimonides before I knew Yosef. And it's an interesting the way the cycle of life goes. And I'm happy to be here. Obviously, I'm on the leadership all of the Rabbanim. I just have a few words. I can't follow my Maimonides, but it's wonderful. This is graduation time. And in the secular world, we study, we get our degree, we say goodbye and go out in the world. It's different in the yeshiva world because we don't, as Raviano said before, we don't just study, we learn. And learning is different because learning, we never stop learning. There's always a new chiddush. There's another Tosfos that we could try to figure out. There's Daf Yomi. Even the Parsha. Every year we do the same, we read the same Parsha, and each time we learn a new chiddush. But that process is difficult. It's difficult to learn. And that's the reason for this sefer, is that we can learn, with the help of the Rabbanim at this yeshiva and all the yeshivas, we are going to learn how to learn with the help of the sefer of my dear son-in-law. Also, in this parsha, there is Bahalos, which has been mentioned a number of times already. But that the mitzvah is not just to learn to light the candle, the menorah. It takes preparation to start that menorah. You have to make the olive oil. You have to clean the wicks. It's a very tedious process. And the process of learning is likewise very tedious. And again, with the help of the Sefer, we can learn how we can learn the process of learning of the EU. There's also yesterday's Parsha. When Bnei Yisrael left Har Sinai, Rashi says, that they ran out of school. It's as if it's kids running out of school for a summer vacation. I like to be a little done with twist on this, with the permission of my own, of Rashi and everyone else. It may be mentioned somewhere. I like to think of it as B'nai Yisrael was running out because they had received the Torah and they wanted to be Marbit's Torah. And they were so excited with what they had learned at Har Sinai, Mount 7 Mishma, that they were ready to go out and be Marbit's Torah and be Or LaGoyim. So by lighting the menorah and by learning and by being Marbit's Torah, hopefully we can be Or LaGoyim and we can help bring Mashiach b'mehera b'yameinu.
We started off the night discussing how Rav Nisbach and the Sefer had contributed to Ad Shalavis Ola Me'ala until the candle was able to light by itself, until Tamitim could stand on their own 2 feet in order to be able to learn. But I think there's another aspect and element of the Sefer that hopefully will serve as a good introduction to the main event to Rav Nisbach. And that is the second answer of Rashi. Second answer, Rashi says that there was a were these steps in front of the menorah that Aaron HaKohen was required to stand on the steps. Of course, we'll talk about whether it was necessary for him to stand on the steps, whether he just did it on his own. And he went up in order to light the menorah. He took those steps by himself. What's the significance about taking those steps? Question number one. Question number two, very, very quickly. The Torah says that when the menorah was created, that the menorah reflected and resembled the menorah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu. What does that mean that Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu? The Midrashim explained that there were different malachim, different voices in Chazal that explain different malachim teaching Moshe Rabbeinu exactly how the menorah looked like. It was difficult to figure out exactly how the menorah should be fastened. One of the midrashim points to Gabriel, which makes sense. If you look in a lot of the midrashic literature, Gabriel is the star shel ish, and the menorah represented the fire. It makes sense that he's going to be the one to show how the menorah should be built. However, there's a sifri that that identifies that as the Malach Michal. The Malach Michal is the star of the Jewish people. What's the idea behind the Malachim teaching us about the menorah? I think the idea that the Midrash is trying to convey is that there was this concept of a supernal menorah, a perfect menorah up in Shemayim. And the accomplishment of the menorah in the Mikdash was that it was reflecting that perfect menorah that existed up in Shemayim. If you're into Plato, so the form, the perfect form that it's, the form down in this world was a reflection of the perfect version of that idea up in the upper realms. And I think we could say with confidence that we heard from Rav Ronsweig not so long ago, that Rav Nisbacher Shirim, somebody who could speak from experience being both a Talmud of Rav Nisbacher and of Rav Ronsweig, that you're able to see and feel that the Shirim of Rav Ronsweig heavily impacted Rav Nisbacher Shirim, and you see that continuity of Misora. And therefore we see that menorah that was on high being implemented here in this world. And additionally to that, the way that Aaron HaKohen had to walk up to the menorah, I think what the Torah is trying to tell us, Chazal, is that if one wants to achieve and access Limud HaTorah, the Chachmas HaTorah, they need to be constantly growing and moving higher. They can't be stagnant, they can't be sitting on the ground. They need to walk up to the steps in order to properly light the menorah to access the Chachmas HaTorah. And certainly Rav Nisbacher, throughout his Al-Shirim, has given each of his Talmidim the ability to access the Chachmas HaTorah, to climb the ladder, to go on, to become independent Lomdim, to achieve great success in other areas of life. to go into advanced shiurim, and with those fundamentals that exist there, has given each of those talmidim the ability to continue to grow. And hopefully this the sefer will be able to give access to those who don't go to shalom, like we said before, those same skills. And without further ado, from this vodka.
Okay. First of all, big hashgacha for those people, for everyone who's here. I realize that time-wise, we are in a tight spot. I have definitely ruined many a lunch, and yeah. Rishus Rosh Yeshiva, a big, big thank you, first of all, to Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Yammer, for organizing this evening, for being very supportive of this evening, spearing this evening, Rav Zach, a big Ashikach as well, for pushing things forward. Really very, very much appreciated. A special schluss, a special privilege to have my parents and my in-laws here, something that has not been able to be taken for granted at all. And the truth is, the reason that I had the chutzpah to go through with this event, and B, whatever, the reason that I went through with this, for the most part, is my parents and in-laws could at least see some of the fruits of whatever it is going on here in Eretz Yisrael. I want to also make sure to just begin by quickly thanking, and then I'll get to my main words, my wife and my family. They're looking here at me like, okay, finally we came for a reason. The food's been done a long time ago. And first and foremost, to my wife for being so supportive. Many a time it's 2-3 in the morning and she comes, comes to the door of the study like, what are you doing? Are you crazy? And I said, no, I just need a few more minutes. And she gives me those few more minutes. You know what I'm saying? Like, she lets me go. And then that's just one small example. There's obviously a lot more. I'm being a little facetious. To not accomplish anything in general, and certainly could not have accomplished the safer without the help of my wife, who even actually proofread part of the book. That was scared to death of that. When she said, let me proofread. No, don't. Let me proofread. But it went well. It went well. So a big thank you. And to family, kids, having fathers a Rebbe can sometimes be a challenge. You know, the potential for being embarrassed by your parents is multiplied exponentially when your parents sit in front of large groups of people speaking. And as it's bad enough, that kids have to have parents, and certainly Kavu Chomer, parents, rabbi, and bald, and whatever. There's just so much that they have to put up with. And I definitely very much appreciate them. And I enjoy each of them in their own right, in their own way. First things first, believe it or not, the sefer that's here, a few copies on the table, which came at 4:47 this afternoon. The printer got it in plenty of time for the event. Is actually not even the final version. The final version of Ez Hashem will be hardcover, more mechubed, but hardcover takes a while. You get in line until it gets printed. And the truth is, I was planning on bringing the 7 years ago precursor of this book. This even, how do I know it's 7 years? Because Ak told me it predates him, right? So this is at least, definitely, I think it's about 7 years old. And then Rav Eli Zimbel comes up to me and says, oh, we got Mazel Tov on the event tonight. I have one of the earliest versions. And I'm thinking like, really? I don't think I had this guy when you were around as a Talmud. And then here it is, 12 years ago. This is what it looked like 12 years ago. Unbelievable. And here, many, many syllables later, we have, it's really hard to write a book. I want to thank all of you for being here. I want to also thank my last thank you is people help. Rav Leibowitz, I have to sing out Rav Leibowitz. I'm sure he's sitting there with Moshe on his lap on the live stream. I don't think I'm sure about that at all. But give a big thank you to Rav Leibowitz for dealing with all my questions. Rav Leibowitz is my guru in terms of publishing. Rav Leibowitz has written so many books. And I also want to also mention Rav Turetsky and Rav Waxman and Rav David Beshevkin, who all in their own way had a couple of very helpful conversations with Rav Dovashev, and a few very important conversations with Rav Waxman, and
Rav Terestia, constant dialogue. So a big thank you. Plus Talmidim, who over the years have helped with ideas and editing. And I would love to be able to mention some of them, but I don't want to leave anyone out. But they know who they are, and they definitely helped. They definitely helped a lot, and I really appreciate that. Yeah, this Sefer, sometimes you write a book, and so you wrote a book. But this is all I got. I don't have, you know, everyone's saying, oh, halavai the next Sefer. This is it. This is me. There is not going to be an Ian 2, you know, the sequel. This is what I am. As Waxman put it so succinctly, according to the Maran Shabbos Kuf Dalet, Anochi says the Gemara, Ana Navshi Kaspis Yahavis. I've written myself down and handed it over. My essence is Chinuch, and Chinuch is about giving tools. Chinuch is about Hamidu Tamidim Harbe, letting people stand on their own and being independent, as we've heard so much. I'm so happy that so many of the speakers have really, really nailed it. And I've devoted my life not just to Chinuch, but to Chinuch and Gemara Be'ion. As I believe my father-in-law quoted, I don't know if he meant to quote it, but it was dead on to learn. My father, you know, obviously had a lot of good stories, and I'll be hearing about that. I'm not sure we'll have to debate if that's going to be the topic or the certain wedding performers are going to be the topic going forward. You know, we'll see. And many more people than were at the wedding are laughing. So I have a feeling that those gifts are out there. And so I'm going to speak just quite as long as I want, huh? Laugh at me, but then pay the price. So the sheer motto of learning how to learn to love to learn, so much encapsulates tools for learning, being independent learning, but also that leading to avos haTorah. As Rav Yamer said so beautifully, when I asked Rav Yamer for haskama, divrei bracha for the sefer, and then I read it, and he hit the nail on the head so beautifully that learning how to learn is not just about being proficient or about being skilled. Learning how to learn is about loving learning. And it's so important to not just do it, and it's so important to feel connected to it and to love you. And the truth is, in a minute, I'm going to take the last couple minutes that I have to sort of, you know, tell you the story of my relationship with Ian. It was not always quite as smooth. So we'll give me an extra minute for that. And Rav Rosenzweig's words in the Haskama were also very meaningful to me, that my enthusiasm for Ian, you know, came through in the book. In his words, if I may, Rav Nussbacher's presentation is suffused with a sense of wonder, awe, and avas haTorah, especially avas limud be'iyun. The Sefer is clearly a labor of love for one who's completely enamored with the process and concepts of limud be'iyun. And I don't read that out loud, you know, to toot my own horn, because I certainly have a ways to go. But that is what it's about, to have enthusiasm and love for learning. There's one more thing I think it's important to point out, that even though it's going to take an extra minute, it's worth it. And as much as the Sefer presents a mahalach and learning, tools for learning, I'm fully, fully aware, and I think it's important that everyone be aware, that there is no one correct way to learn. If you read the introduction, I tried to pass out some pamphlets with the introduction. It's the essence of the Sefer. It speaks about this at length, and I'll just tell you an interesting story. I had discussions with Rav Rosenzweig about the Sefer, and he... Everyone hated the original title, everyone. When Waxman's already, you know, politely telling you your title stinks. So that's a sign that the title, indeed, the original title is bad. But originally there was a short time where the title was Ion, Fundamentals of Learning Gemara. And as I was about to send that idea out to my focus group on titles, before I even hit send, a very bright Talmud from a couple of years ago, who was very helpful in this Sefer, even though he utterly, you know, hated my Derech HaLimud. And we had a great relationship, you know, after a time. It was really quite wonderful. So I'm getting an all caps email back. I don't even think I hit send on the email. How can you say fundamentals of learning Gemara Be'iyun, as if this is it? Fundamentals for, perhaps, not fundamentals of. And I totally agreed. Even before I hit send on my email, he had answered me, so I sent it back right email. You're totally right. That's what it seemed. And the truth is, I quote from Rav Shimon Shkup in the Achdamot Shari Yosher, who writes this exact point, but I won't quote it to you to save time. But for the couple of minutes I'm going to allow myself, I just want to tell you how me and Ian got here together.
for this evening. It was not always this way. My relationship with learning in general, I had a great upbringing, values, learning, studying everything, learning Torah as well. And in high school, Rabbi Bajnan got me heavily into learning Mishnah Berurah. Every day, a half hour before davening, Mishnah Berurah. And that was the first thing, Mishnah Berurah. We learned Seif Perek Achulin in ninth grade, as I probably still the cycle over there. And that wasn't the main focus. It was a lot of Mishnah Berurah, and Mishnah Berurah still has a warm place in my heart. But that's where it started. I went to YU the year after that, and I learned by Rav Tversky, his first year in YU, my first year in YU, 16 guys in Shir, only some of them engaged. It was great. It was like, Rav Tversky is there, he was like a father figure, so caring. And he tried to, you know, get us interested in Ian. Here, my first real Shir be Ian, Rav Meir Tversky. It was interesting. It wasn't there, wasn't it? Bikias. It's all about Bikias. We started every day with Bikias. We learned Misaf HaShavas, daf after daf. Bikias was where I was. I paid attention in Shir. I learned in Shir. Bikias was where I was. I came to Shalvim. Definitely learned Ian here as well. Shout out, I was in Rav Yaakov's Shir for a good part of the year. Great Shiurim, etc. I'm telling you, it was interesting. It piqued my interest. But still, it's like that high school kid who's still more into sports than into the girls. You know what I'm saying? It was, and part of the, if that was irreverent, and it was still Bikias, Sachim, and trying to finish as much of the Masechta as possible. And you know, Rav Yassin tried. And I was into it. He still has my Bechina that I took with him. And he says I did pretty well. But it wasn't there yet. And then I came to YU. And I ended up in a Rav Yitzchak Shir, not 100% on purpose. That's a separate story. And the beginning, it was tough. There were days I would come out of Shir, you know, I was just angry at the world. I was in a bad, bad mood. I was getting rocked. Like, I was a pretty smart kid, and I was not having trouble with other classes. And here was this Ian thing that was just battering me. We had our ups, but there were big downs. And the truth is, we fought. We argued. Ian and I did. Maybe that's when you know it's like, whoa, this could be the real one, right? Sometimes they're breaking up, they're getting back together. And it took a couple of years. But finally, somewhere mid year two, I'm thinking, I think this is a keeper. And by year three in the Shir, I was feeling comfortable. I was sitting in the front and I was, you know, pretty sure, like, I, you know, to a certain extent, you know, me and Ian were getting engaged. Now, at the end of that third year, now, has anyone ever heard the Hasidic term B'sho? Anyone ever heard that term? Anyone know how Hasidim date? They don't. I hear that. But there's another concept amongst the levels of Hasidim and levels of dating. There is one form of Hasidic dating in which the intended actually meet each other, right? There is one form of that. Hopefully I'm not going to get in trouble for saying that. It happens in the parents of the girl's house. It happens at the dining room table for about 10 minutes with the parents staring at you the entire time. So at the end of my third year, me and Ian had our B'sho. Rav Rosenzweig arranged for me to meet a visiting rabbi named Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Not just anywhere. I was to meet Rav Lichtenstein after Shir in the Rav's apartment in the Morgue Lounge, in the parents' home. And that was one of the most intense 45-minute conversations I've ever had in my life. I did not know Rav Lichtenstein. It was, without wanting to be intimidating, especially being very, very intimidating. And I was sitting at the dining room table, and the Rav was just staring at me the whole time. You know, as I sat there, you know, I believe Rav Aaron was then, Rav Rosenzweig were trying to encourage me to actually go, you know, perhaps to another yeshiva when I returned to Eretz Yisrael. It was intense. I've never tripped over my third person quite as much as during those 45 minutes. It was really awkward. But I came to Gruss. I was in Gruss for a year physically and 3 years Shir-wise. And I heard Shir from Rav Aaron for 3 years. And that was it. Averson, Nisuin, and and here we are. The truth is, when I thought about what to say tonight, and with this I'm going to conclude, Shavuos was in the air, and we obviously just had a beautiful family simcha, a wedding, as many of you have, you know, seen clips of. And, you know, the wedding bells were in the air. Can I share with you for 1 second a very, very personal insight? Walking a child down the aisle, only done it once, but it's one of the most poignant, powerful, emotionally charged moments of your life. Mother on one side, father on the other side, walking her down to be united as a new entity, a new unit with the chassan who's waiting under the chuppah. One of the most sublime experiences in life. And it was beautiful, very, very beautiful. Without making comparisons, but I was struck when I thought what to say that I needed to end with the following thought. I got dressed up in my best clothes and the band started to play my favorite song. Rav Aaron took me from one side, Rav Rosenzweig took me from the other side. And there under the chuppah was trying to help people learn the Iyun, connecting to Torah B'Iyun. And I thank the Ribbono Shel Olam. I thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for this beautiful relationship. I hope that I'm worthy of this relationship. I commit to try to invest in this relationship as much as possible. And I thank all of you, not just for your patience and for your listening, but for the ability for me to share my enthusiasm for Iyun and try to motivate people for Iyun. It's the biggest growth in the world, the greatest profession in the world. I thank everyone so much for listening. I thank everyone so much for coming and for the extra few moments, more than two. I owe you guys big time. Thank you all so much. I think we're